This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Ha cha 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 cha.
From the name that means magic in entertainment, this Christmas, Walt Disney brings you a puppy. Or two.
No. 10! 11!
It's fabulous!
And a woman who will stop at nothing to get them.
15 puppies. How marvelous.
All of them.
Hiddle.
She's a devil. Oh, a witch.
All.
13!
Wait a minute. 6 more.
Plus 2 is 11.
36 over here.
36 and 11, that's...
What?
Why is that, Mr. Dad?
99.
Have you ever seen so many puppies?
101?
I'll take them all, the whole litter.
It's 101 against one.
They're somewhere in this village, and we're going to find them.
But when the one is Cruella de Vil, then the odds are even.
Birdie, watch out!
Walt Disney's 101 Dalmatians. It all adds up to the gift of magic from Disney this Christmas.
You don't say.
Oh, balderdash.
No puppies were injured in the making of this podcast. Hello, and welcome to the 86th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, Dave, Joe, and Mike, and today I'm joined once again by the rising star, Tara. Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, Kevin would have been on here, but he just couldn't make it tonight, so we're just going to... The show must go on, pretty much.
That's showbiz.
Yep. So today we're going to be continuing the Disney spotlight with 101 Dalmatians. Why don't you take the history lesson there?
Sure thing. So 101 Dalmatians is a 1961 American animated film produced by Walt Disney and based on the novel by the same name, The 101 Dalmatians by Dottie Smith. It is 17th in the Walt Disney Animated Classic series, and the film was originally released to theaters on January 25th, 1961, by Buena Vista Distribution. The plot centers on the fate of the kidnapped puppies of Pongo and Birdita.
What are your general memories of this one?
I loved it. It was one of my very early Disney films growing up, and I really enjoyed watching it. I really enjoyed the story, and I'm a dog lover, so of course this film really appealed to me. One thing that I do remember the most about this film is definitely Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
And she frightened me. I will admit, she frightened me. As she was probably one of the most memorable villains I remember growing up, who I can honestly say really looked the part.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, because, I mean, this film is, it was pretty modern for its time, and I believe it was one of the first films to take place during a modern period, not medieval or
right.
Some made up time. So it was just awesome to see this story play out.
Yeah, for me, it's about the same. This is another one of those Disney movies that I like, but... It's not one that I specifically I don't have a specific memory of watching this one. I remember watching it multiple times as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And just really, really well done. Very much well done as far as that goes. When I was watching it back today, or, you know, when this will go up, when I was watching it back to just to refresh my memory on this one, I still love this movie. This movie is just great. One of the things I'll point out as we kind of go along, but I'll point it out here now, the dogs are pretty much human-like.
Oh, yes.
Well, I don't say that in a bad way, because what I'm kind of getting at is last episode, Kevin said that he didn't like how human-esque Lady and Tramp were in the first film with the spaghetti and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He wished that they were more, you know, more dog-like. And for this one, for 101 Dalmatians, it's the point of view of the dog. I mean, it's the direct point of view of the dog. I mean, the Lady and the Tramp did the same thing, but I mean, this does it even more, because yeah. You have Pongo narrating, you have him, you know, interacting throughout the entire film, obviously, and it was just great, and I thought it was so hilarious that he called Roger a pet.
Oh, I love the humor in this film.
Yeah,
it's got great humor. It's got great characters, and I guess you know what? I guess really why I remember this film is because of when I was around 4 or 5 years old. I just remember all the merchandise for this film.
Yeah,
because it was still popular when I was like 4.5, 5 years old.
Yeah,
and I just remember, you know, having the 101 Dalmatian shower curtain. And the soap dish, and this like toy, and McDonald's giving away stuff. Like, I guess that's probably why I remember it the most, besides just watching it. But all the merchandise that came out when they re-released it on VHS.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah, I remember when they finally released it on 2-disc. I think it was 2-disc special or platinum edition. One of those.
Yeah.
One of those Disney editions. It came with dog tag keychains, I think.
Aww.
Yeah. Or it came with something special like that, which is very, very, very cool. Just overall, you know, really, really great, great movie.
And the animation style of it was so different than other Disney films.
Yeah, I mean, I know that. Because when I first brought up to him about doing Disney films, instead of, you know, about having the Disney spotlight, and for those of you that have been longtime Tooncast listeners like Ken Curry, will know that the first part of the Disney spotlight was kind of like we were aiming for, like, the first few Disney films. Like, we did Sleeping Beauty, and then Snow White, and then we did Aladdin, Jungle Book, Sword in the Stone, and Oliver and Company. So those were kind of like Aladdin, Jungle Book, and Sword in the Stone, and Oliver and Company were kind of like mine and Kevin's favorites. Whereas now we've gone through and picked and choosed certain films from Disney. But what we've done is from episode 81 to episode 90, they're in theatrical release year order. So we started with Pinocchio, we'll end with Lion King. So this was the, and obviously, you know, between Lady and the Tramp and 101, that was the next film after Lady and the Tramp in the order that we're going in, because obviously we can't cover every single Disney film.
Obviously not.
I mean, if we went through, and of course we're not going to go back and double dip, but if we had gone through and listed and just gone off the, like, say, the Wikipedia list of all 50 Disney animated features, and including their sequels as well, you know, we could have an entire podcast of just Disney films, but we didn't just want to do that, because obviously we want to cover other stuff here on Tooncast. So, so the way that these are going now is in year release order, but it's films that we pick and choose. It's not in order of everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So getting into the characters and the voice actors, just really great casting. I mean, I don't know, I don't recognize a lot of the names. I mean, I recognize Thurl Ravenscroft, I recognize J. Pat O'Malley, I recognize Betty Lou Gerson, or Gerson, Ben Wright, but I mean, just the voice acting was just amazing. Even though I don't recognize a lot of these names, just they fit the characters so well.
I definitely agree with you on that. I thought the voice actor for Pongo was amazing.
Yeah, Rod Taylor.
Oh, that was, he had a great voice for that character.
Yep.
Yeah, it was, I'll agree with you, a very good cast, and all the characters were just really well done. And it made the film watchable. So, nothing bad to say about that.
No, I'm looking for the Colonel. Where's the Colonel?
J. Pat O'Malley was the Colonel.
Okay, yeah. J. Pat O'Malley also, as soon as I heard the Colonel's voice, I'm like, hey, wait a second. It's Colonel Hattie from Jungle Book. No, J. Pat O'Malley, I believe, did it. I mean, because it's the exact same voice. I mean, as what Colonel Hattie is in Jungle Book. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
That's interesting.
This is probably the first Disney film that I actually like a cat in it. Sergeant Tibbs.
Oh, Sergeant Tibbs. He's so cool.
Yes, he is.
It's a cool cat.
Very, very cool cat.
If that cat existed in real life, I'd totally want it as my pet.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah, or my friend. Maybe my friend.
Yeah. Either way, it would be so, so awesome.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite character from this one?
Oh, I love Pongo. He's so funny. Just in the beginning with his personality, just the way he is, when they're bachelors and the way he talks about his life and the way he tells the story through his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really, really great character. And I love this dog. Like, this dog is just incredible. And yeah. He's very funny. And he's memorable.
Oh, yeah. He's very memorable. I mean, go ahead.
And in terms of another character that I also like Sergeant Tibbs,
yeah.
Which we just talked about.
Yeah. You know, anytime I see like a Disney plaque or a Disney photo of all of their animated film characters, Pongo usually is there, or if it's not Pongo, it's Pongo and Purdy with maybe some of the puppies in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Pongo has become and will always be, you know, a classic Disney character. I mean, Purdy as well, but I mean, Pongo's always around in Disney art when they're like talking about or when they're showing all of the characters over the years. And like I said before, I just can't believe, because it's kind of, you know, where the movie is in Pongo's point of view. And I think they told this a heck of a lot better than they did with Lady and the Tramp from Lady's point of view, because it's one of those things where it's a dog story here. I mean, the humans technically are secondary characters, but the humans in Lady and the Tramp were more secondary characters than these guys were, but still, Roger and Anita are so secondary characters as far as the owners of the dogs. And then, of course, Cruella.
Oh, Cruella.
Oh, yeah.
Cruella de Vil.
Yes.
Just had to get into that.
Yeah, there's no way in hell I'm singing on this podcast.
It's okay.
But yeah, there's no such thing as TFD and Mike singing. And of course, if you don't put a space in her last name, it's Cruella de Evil.
Devil.
Yeah, Devil. Cruella Devil. Yeah.
No pun intended there.
Oh no, it's fully intended.
Yep. It took me a while to figure that out, but...
Yeah.
Now I laugh every time I say Cruella de Vil.
Yeah. You know, she is obviously the quintessential villain for this piece, whereas Horace and Jasper...
Oh, man. Those two.
I don't see them as villains, though.
No, I don't see them as villains either.
The reason why I don't see Horace and Jasper as villains is because, yes, they did steal the puppies, or yes, they bought the puppies, or, you know, the ones that came from Pongo and Purdy, they did steal them, and they did break and, you know, they did do some light B&E with getting into the house, but they took them, and they took them back to the old DeVille place, but they'd never actually skin them or hit them. I mean, they had the intention to, and they were going to, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't... The whole time that Tibbs is trying to get the puppies out of the mansion, Horace and Jasper are sitting there eating sandwiches, drinking wine, you know, watching TV.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like Cruella where she would just immediately attack the dogs or...
And swear.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You imbeciles.
You idiots.
Yeah. That's one of the things I really remember about her is just her attitude and her language she used. Oh, this is one woman you don't want to piss off. Like, ever.
Bloody woman drivers.
Yeah, she can't drive either.
Oh, God. And I'm sorry, and I know I'm kind of jumping ahead to the plot stuff, but I'm sorry. When I was watching this, and she was driving the thing... When the car ended up in the embankment there, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, there's no way in hell that car was going to power out of that, even though it did. That's just so weird.
Disney logic.
Yeah, Disney logic must apply. Obviously, outside of Cruella, do we have any least favorite characters in this one?
I don't really have a least favorite character. Maybe a character that I thought didn't really serve a purpose is probably Nanny.
Well, she kind of served a purpose because...
Like, she was cute. Like, I thought she was cute, but I mean, I guess from my point of view, she didn't really appeal to me that much. Like,
well, that's fine.
She was just there.
Well, yeah, but she was only just there at certain times. She was there when the puppies were being born. Mm-hmm. She was there when they got stolen, obviously. And she was mm-hmm. there at the, you know, at the point where, you know... on Christmas and all that, but I mean, it's not like she was there throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's a heck of a lot better than a four-legged dog nanny.
Oh, that's true. Are we back to Nana, are we?
Yeah.
Aw, poor Nana. Yeah, I wouldn't say I dislike Nanny, I guess she wasn't my favorite. She wasn't someone I'd say that I particularly liked in this film, but everyone else I had no issue with, except for Cruella, who scared me like shitless. So yeah, that just sums it up for me in terms of characters. How about you?
I'm the same. You know, I obviously Cruella isn't a villain, even though she's scared. I mean, she's a villain, but she isn't a villain that you outright hate. She's a villain that you love to hate.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of those villains that it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm sure PETA would love to hate her too.
Yeah, exactly. So getting into some of the behind the scenes stuff, Bill Pete, I recognize for the story, and of course Dottie Smith, who is the novelist of the book. Wolfgang Reitherman, I recognize from Jungle Book. Other than that, don't really recognize anybody. The film is a landmark in animation history for many reasons. It is the first Disney animated film to be set in contemporary setting. It is also the first Disney film created by single story man Bill Pete, which is very interesting. Let's see. The production of the film also signaled a change in the graphic style of Disney's animation. Ubleworks, in charge of special processes at the studio, had been experimenting with Xerox photography to aid in animation. By 1959, he had modified a Xerox camera to transfer drawings by animators directly to cells, eliminating the inking process and preserving spontaneity of the penciled elements. That's kind of interesting, actually.
That's very interesting.
Another reason for its look was the animators were used to producing sketchy drawings, and the cleanup was done in the process of transferring the drawings to the cells. With the hand inkers gone, the animation remained as the animators drew it. Later, it became common to do cleanup on paper before the animation was copied, and with time, the experience and the process improved, which is very, very cool.
Which is why this film has such a distinct look to it.
Yep. And unlike many Walt Disney animated features, 101 Dalmatians features only three songs, thank God, with just one, Cruella de Vil, playing a big part in the film. The other two songs are Canine Crunchy's jingle song, sung by Lucille Bliss, who voiced Anastasia in Disney's 1950 film Cinderella, and Dalmatian Plantation, in which only two lines are sung by Roger at the film's closure. Songwriter Mel Levin had in fact written several additional songs for the film, including Don't Buy a Parrot from a Sailor, a Cockney chant meant to be sung by the Baddins at the DeVille Mansion. The March of the 101, which was the dogs were meant to sing after escaping Cruella by Van. I'm so glad that they only had three songs.
Oh, this film wouldn't be what it was if it had that many songs.
Some films, especially Disney films, they only need a set amount of songs. They don't need
like eight songs.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this film had that many songs though? Like it wouldn't be like, you know, a movie, it'd be a Broadway musical.
Yes.
So, as done with other Disney films, Walt Disney hired an actress to perform live action scenes as a reference for the animation process. Actress Helene Stanley, I hope I pronounced her name right, performed the live-action reference for the character of Anita. She did the same kind of work for the characters of Cinderella and Princess Aurora in Sleeping Beauty. Now, according to Christopher Finch, author of The Art of Walt Disney, he says this, Disney insisted that all scenes involving human characters should be shot first in live-action to determine that they would work before the expensive business of animation was permitted to start. The animators did not like this way of working, feeling it detracted from their ability to create character. The animators understood the necessity for this approach and in retrospect acknowledged that Disney had handled things with considerable subtlety.
Yes.
Wow. I guess from an animator's point of view, I guess I can understand where they're coming from.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
But on the other hand, you would think that live action would help them in a way to get the proportions right and stuff.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it back then, they didn't have technology that we had today. So it wasn't that easy to do these kind of films. Today, it's so much easier. Because they can just, you know, they have programs and whatnot. So they're able to do it better now than they were then. But I guess back then this worked in terms of shooting an actual film sequence and then transferring the live action to paper. And I remember seeing a section of the live action being shot, not for this film, but for Sleeping Beauty. And that was pretty interesting actually to see them doing that. So I guess Disney knew what he was doing back then.
Yeah. Well, for the most part, Disney knew what he was doing throughout his entire work, so
yeah.
Not just this film, but other films.
Definitely.
For the most part, there are some that I question, especially the very first Disney animated feature. But anyway, I guess getting into the actual show, Kevin's not here to give us a 5-minute plot synopsis, but pretty much the basic plot is Pongo is a Dalmatian who is owned by Roger, and Roger, they live this bachelor lifestyle, and Pongo wants to, you know, get Roger not to be a bachelor anymore. So we see a scene where Pongo's looking down at the street, and we see a whole bunch of dogs walk by. Wow. Those early prospects were... And I like how I really like how Pongo looked at the dog first and then looked at the human.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, because obviously Pongo is gonna look at the dog first since he's a dog, and then you know check the human out. So, wow, those early ones were just oof.
Like bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, he eventually sees who is Anita and Perdita. And he actually tricks Roger because he moves the clock ahead to going out to the park. and finding them entangles them up, and next thing you know, they're in love and they're living in a little house, and you know, they're having puppies, or they're going to be having puppies, and then enter Cruella. And this, again, goes to my point of earlier. I made a point off air of the podcast, because we are Ustreaming this episode as well. I made a point off air of the podcast that I am so totally against smokers and smoking and tobacco. And I don't like smoke, whatever. I don't like Black and Miles. I don't like regular cigarettes. I can't breathe around that crap.
Yeah, me either.
And enter Cruella with this flowing green spewing smoke cigarette.
I feel sorry for them.
Yes, yes. And she wants the puppies. Well, they're not here yet. Oh, well, let me know when they get there. And then we get to the point, you know, 3 weeks later when the puppies arrive. And they go through the whole process of 7, 11, 13, 14, 15. Oh, no, just 14. This one didn't make it.
Aww.
And now I'm wondering, and maybe you can answer this, Tara. I don't know. Is it just that the little puppy wasn't warm enough? Because, I mean, when I watched it back and Roger was shaking the little bundle, I'm thinking, you're not supposed to shake babies. That's how they die.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm assuming that he was just trying to warm the puppy up.
I think he was just trying to warm the puppy up. I think maybe the puppy, from what I know with dogs and puppies, I'm going to assume from that the dog wasn't breathing. There's probably still something in its lungs, because when they're born, they come out of these sacks, and the mother dog will usually rip open these sacks with their teeth. Sometimes some dogs will do that, but if they don't do that, then the human has to do that. So what could happen is they open the sack with the 15th puppy, and it had something caught in its lungs still. So it stopped breathing. So I guess when Roger was rubbing it, that probably loosened whatever was blocking its airway, and it was able to breathe again. So that's what I got from that, and also from having a friend who worked in a veterinarian's office.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what I'm gonna say from that. I don't think he was trying to, you know. Yeah, you're right. You're not supposed to shake a dog.
Well, you're not supposed to. The way I looked at it was, you know, shaking babies.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he wasn't really shaking it. He was just kind of
warming it up.
Well, yeah, he was holding the bundle in his hands, and he was, like, kind of shaking his hands is what he was doing. So, but, I mean, and I'm not saying that there's, you know, doggy abuse in Disney film, but, but yeah. And then, of course,
well, he felt bad. He didn't want to see the dog die.
Yeah.
So that's what he was doing. I mean, I look at it from that point of view that he's a caring owner, and his dog Pongo, his dog Pongo was like his buddy. And he saw how Pongo looked when they said only 14. So he knew. He's like, okay, I got to try and save this dog's life. I can't let it die. Because, I mean, it's sad. You don't want to see a baby just born and it's gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was good. It's a good thing that dog survived.
Yes. So, after which they are visited by Cruella, a wealthy former schoolmate of Anita's. She offers to buy the entire litter of puppies for a large sum, but Roger says they are not selling any of the puppies. Weeks later, she hires Jasper and Horace Baddon to steal all of the puppies. When Scotland Yard is unable to prove she stole them or find the puppies, Pongo and Perdita use the Twilight Bark, normally a canine gossip line, to ask for help from the other dogs in England. I really like this.
Oh, the Twilight Bark.
I really, really enjoyed
that. Me too.
Because one of the things I'm going to point out here is within the Twilight Bark, you have Jock and Trusty from Lady and the Tramp. Now, I don't think it was the same voice actors, and they aren't obviously named the same, but it's the exact same designs for the Scottish Terrier as Jock and the old Bloodhound as Trusty. The coloring on the Trusty model was a little off, obviously, because they had to make it different, but everybody can tell it's Jock and Trusty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. And it reaches to the Colonel and Old Sheepdog, along with his compatriots, Captain A Gray Horse and Sergeant Tibbs, a tabby cat. They find the puppies in a place called Hell Hall, a.k.a. the DeVille Place, along with the other Dalmatian puppies that Cruella had purchased from various dog stores. Tibbs learns the puppies are going to be made into dogskin fur coats, and the Colonel quickly sends word back to London. Upon receiving the message, Pongo and Perdita immediately leave London to retrieve their puppies. Meanwhile, Tibbs overhears Cruella ordering the Badams to kill, or the Badans to kill the, and render the puppies that night out of fear the police will soon find them. In response, Tibbs attempts to rescue the puppies himself while the Badans are watching television, but they finish their show and come for them before Tibbs can get the puppies out of the house. Pongo and Perdita burst through the window just as the Badans are cornering them and are about to kill them. While the adult dogs attack the two men, the Colonel and Tibbs guide the puppies from the house.
That's the most epic scene ever.
It was, but I knew that Pongo and Purdy were coming, but I completely didn't even remember that they burst through the window or the wall or whatever it was, because I was like, oh wow. And then I think it was Horace that said, what are these hyenas doing here?
Yeah, that was funny. Well, they do look like, they're snarling.
Yep.
Very angry. I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either.
Give them back their dogs.
Yes. After a happy reunion with their own puppies, the Pongos realize that there are 84 other puppies with them. Shocked at Cruella's plans, they decide to adopt all of the puppies, certain that Roger and Anita would never reject them. The dogs begin making their way back to London, aided by other animals along the way, with Cruella and the Badans giving chase. In one town, they cover themselves up with soot so they appear to be Labrador retrievers, and then pile inside a moving van going back to London. As the van is leaving, melting snow clears off soot, and Cruella sees them. In a maniacal rage, she follows the van in her car and rams it, but the Badans, trying to cut off the van from above, end up colliding with her. Both vehicles crash into a deep ravine. Cruella yells in frustration as the van drives away. This is one of those films that, yes, Cruella is the villain, but I'm glad they didn't kill her off.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like with Sleeping Beauty with Maleficent or the Evil Queen in Snow White or anything like that. Yes, Cruella is a villain. I'm not going to deny that, but she deserves a life sentence in jail rather than the death penalty.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they didn't kill the stepmother from Cinderella either.
Yeah.
She doesn't die. She just...
That's true.
At the end of Cinderella 3, she just becomes a scullery maid.
Yeah.
That's it. That's her punishment, and that fits the crime.
Yes, very much so. So to close out the plot here, back in London, Roger and Anita are attempting to celebrate Christmas and Roger's first big hit, this song about Cruella, but they miss their canine friends. Suddenly, barking is heard outside, and after the nanny opens the door, the house is filled with dogs. Labradors! After wiping away more of the soot, the couple is delighted to realize their companions have returned home. They decide to use the money from the song to buy a large house in the country so they can keep all 101 Dalmatians. Yay.
Wow, that's a lot of dogs.
And I like Roger's explanation, because they're all, at the end, they're all counting, and he's doing math, which math is evil and needs to die. And he's like, at the end of it all, he's like, 101. I really like that. What are some of your favorite parts about this one?
As I mentioned previously, I like the bursting through the window.
Yep.
Scene, rescue scene. I also like the beginning scene where Pongo's looking out the window, scoping out the chicks or female dogs and their human counterparts. I also really like the chase scene in the van, in the moving van.
Yeah, that was very well done.
That was really well done. And the one scene that was really memorable for me is Cruella's eyes when she's crazy.
Yep.
Oh, man, that one just stuck with me forever. Just because she really looks like a devil there.
Yeah, I love the entire movie. no, seriously. I mean, seriously. No,
that's good. That's good. That's good.
I mean, I honestly don't. This is a movie that, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but it is based off of a book. But, I mean, Disney really, you know, Bill Pete and everyone else that worked on the story did an amazing job of telling a story from beginning, middle, and end. I didn't really see any, you know, any issues that I would take normally, like with the Cinderella films, with, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and all that stuff. I really take no issue with this movie at all. And I really don't dislike any of the scenes either. I will agree with you, the Pongo and Purdy bursting through the window, that was funny. I actually like the Colonel and Tibbs and the captain with the horse. I like the way that they act, and I like a lot of the secondary characters in this, but I also like all of the main characters as well. So we'll kind of alternate on the trivia. We're not going to go through all of these, but there's some really, really cool trivia bits. Someone counted all of the black spots in the movie frame by frame and reached a total of 6,469,952 spots.
Holy crap. That's
a lot of spots. Let's talk about the hidden Mickey. It's on almost every single Dalmatian.
Oh, yeah. You got a good eye, you'll spot it.
Yeah, I don't think I noticed any of them. Then again, I wasn't really looking for them.
Yeah, I didn't even know there were hidden Mickeys until actually I just, you know, was doing research for this podcast. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like, what was that one movie that hid stuff? I'm trying to think, was it Roger? I was trying to think of a movie that always had like a hidden icon. One that I can think of, not really hidden, but kind of like a logo throughout the entire movie was, and I know this is completely not a cartoon, but is X-Men. There's X's everywhere in X-Men.
That's cool.
Yeah. In the USA, this was the highest grossing movie of 1961. That's very cool.
That's great.
Clarence Nash, best known for the voice of Donald Duck, did the dog barks for this film. That's very cool as well.
Very interesting. And the birth of the puppies actually happened to the author Dottie Smith. Her Dalmatians had 15 puppies. One was born lifeless and her husband revived it. However, they sold most of them and kept only a small number.
Yeah.
So inspired by true events.
Yeah, that's very cool. In the Ustream chat, Ken Curry says 101. That's a lot of dog biscuits. Yes, you are right, sir. That is a lot of dog biscuits.
A lot of milk bones.
Why do you think they moved out to a farm?
And as you'll see if you watch the cartoon series of this film, they don't really give them dog biscuits. They have like a trough, and they have Nanny on a bicycle, and she, as she's bicycling, food just comes out, pours out of this barrel to feed all the Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny.
Yes.
There's so many of them. You can't just give them dog biscuits.
Yeah, no, you can't. but, I mean, you know, we said it earlier, the three songs that are in the film were enough for this film.
Mm-hmm.
It fit the pacing for the film very well, and everybody remembers the Cruella de Vil song. You may not remember the lyrics offhand, but you remember the melody.
Because it's so memorable.
Yes.
Just the melody. And it's got funny lyrics. If she doesn't scare you, no evil thing will.
Cruella de Vil. And getting into the legacy segment, as far as the release, 101 Dalmatians was first released at theaters on January 25th, 1961. After its initial theatrical run, it was re-released in theaters four more times, January 1969, June 79, December 85, and July 91. 101 Dalmatians was released on VHS April 10th, 1992 as a part of the Walt Disney Classics video series. It was re-released March 9th, 1999 as part of the Walt Disney Masterpiece Collection video series. On December 19th, 1999, it received its first DVD release as part of Disney's limited issue series, and a two-disc Platinum Edition DVD was released on March 4th, 2008. You want to take care of some of the reception there?
Sure thing. 101 Dalmatians was the highest-grossing film of 1961, as we've mentioned previously, occurring $6.4 million in distributors' domestic rentals during its first year of release, and one of the studio's most popular films of the decade. The film was reissued to theaters in 1969, 1979, 1985, and 91. The 91 reissue was the 20th highest earning film of the year for domestic earnings. It has earned $250 million in worldwide box office earnings during its lengthy history and currently holds a 97 fresh rating from critics and users on RottenTomatoes.com. It has also received a BAFTA award in 1962. It won the BAFTA Film Award for Best Animated Film USA.
That is very, very cool.
Yes, good job. 101 Dalmatians.
Yes, and we may get to these eventually in MWire, but we're not going to cover them here. But there's sequels and spinoffs. In the years since the original release of the movie, Disney has taken the property in various directions. The earliest of these endeavors was the live-action remake 101 Dalmatians, starring Glenn Close as Cruella de Vil. None of the animals talked in this 1996 edition. The version's success in theaters led to 102 Dalmatians, released on November 22, 2000. Now, I have not seen 102 Dalmatians, the live-action version of it. I did see 101, and I do think that Glenn Close was the best choice.
Oh, definitely.
A live-action Cruella. And I'm also very glad that the puppies did not talk.
Yeah, that would have been kind of odd.
It would have been underdog weird.
Yeah, I just don't think it would have worked for this.
No, it wouldn't.
For live action.
I mean, if you were going to have, like, a narration from Pongo, like, from the mind of Pongo, but for live action, sometimes it just doesn't work, especially transferring over from Disney Animation. I would much rather prefer the humans talk and the dogs just bark and react.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would just be too weird for me.
Like them acting and doing, you know, doing like they're not talking, but they do things that kind of make you think they're, you know, they're human.
Yeah, exactly.
Which they did very well.
Yes, very much so. After the first live-action version of the movie, a cartoon called 101 Dalmatians the Series was launched. The designs of the characters were stylized further to allow for economic animation and appeal to the contemporary trends. Most recently, 101 Dalmatians 2, Patch's London Adventure, the official sequel to the original animated film, was released straight to VHS DVD on January 21st, 2003. Now, I don't remember even seeing the sequel. I honestly don't.
I didn't watch it.
Yes. So, up next, you're going to hear the trailer for 101 Dalmatians 2, Patch's London Adventure. We'll be back after this.
Walt Disney's original classic 101 Dalmatians has touched generations with its humor and heart. And now,
oh dear.
The story continues.
Brace yourself.
For the first time on special edition DVD, it's 101 Dalmatians 2 Patch's London Adventure.
You think I'm one of a kind, or just one of 101?
101.
Patch feels lost in a sea of spots.
Nice room!
But when he sets out on his own, he discovers that standing out from the crowd can be a lot harder than he thought.
I'm afraid all I'll ever be is one of 101.
Now, with the help of some new friends,
you know,
you're all right, kid.
He'll find the strength to become a one-of-a-kind hero.
One-of-a-kind. It's remarkable. It's stunning. It's grand.
It makes me smile a lot.
With very special bonus features, including an all-new game and cool music videos.
Absolutely wizard.
It's a one-of-a-kind DVD. Disney's 101 Dalmatians 2, Patch's London Adventure.
Patch was fantastic.
Coming soon to Disney DVD for a limited time only.
And I wasn't expecting to cover 101 Dalmatians 2 in this, but since Kevin put it in the script, we probably should go ahead and do so. So take it away with the history lesson, Tara.
101 Dalmatians 2, Patch's London Adventure, is an American direct-to-video animated film released by Walt Disney Home Entertainment on January 21st, 2003. The film is the sequel to the 1961 Disney animated film 101 Dalmatians. Disney has since re-released the film on September 16th, 2008.
Yes, I do not remember this movie whatsoever. I mean, normally I would have gone back and watched. I would have found this on YouTube and watched it, kind of like what I did with Lady and the Tramp 2, Scamp's Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't have time, and I honestly don't remember this one at all.
I vaguely remember this coming out, but I was not interested in seeing it whatsoever.
Maybe as we go along, our opinions might change just by going through some of the information.
I mean,
so
maybe I will, like, after we wrap this up, maybe I will go back and
yeah.
Watch it. Why not?
Yes. Might as well seek it out afterwards. So getting into the characters and voice actors, Bobby Lockwood is the voice of Patch, is the main protagonist. Patch is one of the 101 Dalmatian puppies. He has a large black spot over one of his eyes, hence his name. He feels lonely and left out, oftentimes with his family, thinking that he is just one of the famous 101 Dalmatians. Now, I gotta say, Patch and Scamp, they should have gotten together.
Yes. Why not? They should meet.
They should be best friends. One of the things I do like about this movie is they actually bring in, from the first film, the puppy's hero. They bring in Thunderbolt. And Barry Bostwick, of all people, voices Thunderbolt. let's see. Susan Blakeslee is Cruella. Who is Cruella in the first? That wasn't Cruella in the first one, right?
Let me
back up here and look.
No, Cruella was voiced by Betty Lou Gerson.
Oh, that's right. Just going off the trailer that I saw when she's telling the radio to shut up, she does sound a little bit like the original voice actress, but obviously it's not.
Yeah.
You got Jason Alexander in this as Little Lightning. Martin Short as Lars. Oh, I can see why I never saw this movie now. Samuel West as Pongo. Oh, wow. They changed the voice actor for Pongo.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm going to like this now. Kath Soucie as Perdita. Oh, yeah.
I don't know any of these voice actors.
Well, I mean, Kath Soucie, I mean, everybody knows Kath Soucie. Martin Short.
I know Martin Short, but I don't, and Jason Alexander.
Yeah.
I don't recognize Samuel West or Kath Soucie.
Kath Soucie, she's done a lot in animation. She was the, she's done so much. She's a very well-known voice actress. Jeff Bennett and Maurice LaMarche played Jasper and Horace. Let's see, Jodie Benson is Anita. Which I guess is okay. Very interesting. I didn't know that. Tara Strong is Two-Tone.
Oh, Tara Strong's in this.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Tara Strong's in a lot of stuff.
Very true, very true. All right, so getting into the actual show, since we have no real behind-the-scenes stuff, the Ratcliffe family and their 101 Dalmatians are... Wait. Was their last name Ratcliffe?
Mm-hmm.
Originally?
Yep.
Oh, okay. The Radcliffe family and their 101 Dalmatians are packing for the big move to their Dalmatian plantation, a farm on an island with plenty of room for them all, located far from the clutches of Cruella de Vil. One of the puppies, Patch, played by Bobby Lockwood, feels lost in a sea of spots and longs to be one-of-a-kind wonder dog like his TV hero, Thunderbolt. While watching the Thunderbolt Adventure Hour TV show, Patch hears about a chance to appear on the show while it is filming in London. Although the move interferes with Patch's opportunity, he gets his chance when he accidentally is left behind in the commotion. Patch heads for the audition to meet his hero and win a guest spot on the show, but his squeaky bark gets him laughed off stage.
Aww.
Aww. Meanwhile, Thunderbolt's sidekick, Lil Lightning, tells him that producers want to kill off his character and replace him with a younger dog. In order to save his job, Thunderbolt decides to venture out into the world and perform an act of true heroism to prove himself. He soon meets Patch, and the two dogs bond over their mutual fear of being just another dog. A veritable reference book to Thunderbolt's many adventures, Patch provides the perfect guide for TV star in his attempts to real-life heroics. Thunderbolt, who has no idea how to act without a script, makes several attempts at heroism, telling Patch that he is giving him a junior deputy test and will let him in on the show if he can pass. Okay, I'm sorry. This is so starting to sound like friggin' Bolt.
Yep.
So,
coincidence?
I think not. Because I'm betting that Disney just recycled this plot for Bolt.
Probably.
Oh my god.
Well, Thunderbolt, hello.
No, I know, but I mean, the movie Bolt is the whole point of Bolt was he was on TV, but he didn't know it.
Yeah.
Whereas Thunderbolt knows that he's on TV and he's trying to save his job.
Mm-hmm.
But Bolt, wow, yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to skip through some of this plot. At the farm, the Ratcliffs finally discover Patch's absence, and along with Patch's parents, Pongo and Perdita, they depart in search for him. At the same time, Cruella bails out her old henchmen, Horace and Jasper, out of jail, sends them to the Radcliffe's new home, traveling in a stolen dog food truck. The Baddons steal the remaining 98 puppies. Cruella and the Baddons bring the puppies to Lars, who falls in love with them. He is inspired to paint, but Cruella declares that he is going to make a masterpiece out of puppy fur. However, Lars refuses. Enraged and disappointed, Cruella has him tied up and goes back to her original plan of making puppy fur coat. Imprisoned, the puppies use the Twilight Bark to send an SOS, which was picked up by Patch and Thunderbolt. As the two set out to save Patch's family, they run to Lightning, who is shocked when he discovers Thunderbolt might actually become a hero, and hurries with the duo to the warehouse where the pups are being held. He convinces Thunderbolt not to use Patch's stealth plan, but to openly attack. Doing so, Thunderbolt manages to scare the Baddons, but is knocked out by Cruella, who has him and Patch imprisoned as well. Lightning then sneaks in and reveals that Thunderbolt is a fraud before leaving. Oh, God. I'm sorry. Going through this plot, piece by piece, just is making me not even want to see this thing.
Turn off.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's not. It doesn't sound like it's as bad as the live action Underdog, but it's close. I can see why some, not all, but I can see why Kevin doesn't like Disney sequels, and I can see why some Disney sequels suck, yep. And this is one of them.
Yep.
So yeah, as Pongo and Purdy and the Radcliffes and their nanny arrive on the scene, Lightning is taken away to the dog pound, the Baddons are arrested, and a mentally broken down Cruella is taken to a mental institute. Patch's parents express their pride while Thunderbolt comments that Patch is a real one-of-a-kind wonder dog. A newspaper montage reveals the fates and characters. Lightning is dubbed in the paper the unkindest cut of all. Lars, using a painting Patch accidentally made by throwing paint at Horace and Jasper, finally receives credit for his genius. Horace and Jasper open up the ladies' boutique with the motto, Fur Bad, Nylon Good. Oh my god. Oh god, my brain is melting. Just, oh god, my brain's
melting. I can't comprehend this right now.
No, I can't either. And Roger's new song, Seeing Spots, becomes a smash hit. Cruella is featured in an issue of The Institution, indicating that she has now been driven completely insane.
Oh, wait, she's already insane?
Yeah, no, ain't that the truth. A post-credit scene shows Thunderbolt in his TV show Patches, his new sidekick, while his brothers and sisters are supporting characters. That's kind of cool.
Hmm.
That's kind of cool.
Interesting.
I gotta say that just going through this plot, kind of talking it out here, there's no way in hell I'm seeking this out after we finish the record. I'm sorry, there's no way I would watch this.
Yeah, that's cool.
It just
I understand where you're coming from. Now to think of it, when it first did come out, I think maybe I saw a couple minutes of it. And then I turned it off. I think it bored me.
Yeah.
I think it wasn't. I see how it is now when I go watch it, but this is. I don't think this is the true sequel to 101 Dalmatians.
Well, it is in Disney's eyes because obviously it does. It does take some. It does expand on some things from the first film.
Yeah.
But. It's kind of it's almost like, see, I can't, I equated Lady and the Tramp 2 to kind of Homeward Bound 2.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even equate this to any other sequel, dog film or otherwise, but what I would say is that you have, I would almost equate this to Return to Neverland, because technically, looking at the plot, it's... If you cut out all the continuity bits, it's the exact same plot minus Roger and Anita meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's the same thing. Cruella's going after the puppies because she wants to make fur coats out of them. That's the general consensus of the plot of both 101 Dalmatians animated film.
She wants that damn fur coat.
But yeah, and I just, God, yeah, moving on. to the music. Apparently there are 6 songs in this one. Seeing Spots, Dalmatian Plantation, The Thunderbolt Adventure Hour, Canine Crunchies, Cruella de Vil, and Try Again, which is performed by Will Young. Seeing Spots is new, Thunderbolt Adventure Hour is probably new, Try Again is obviously new, but the rest of them, the other 3, Dalmatian Plantation, Canine Crunchies, and Cruella de Vil, those are all from the first film. And again, because neither one of us have seen this, we really can't comment on it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, sadly. Did not watch this film.
And moving into the legacy segment, it was nominated for several awards, and it won several awards. Let's see here. Annie Awards, it was nominated in 2004, Outstanding Achievement in Animated Home Entertainment Production, Outstanding Production Design in Animated Feature Production for Bill Perkins, Outstanding Storyboarding in an Animated Feature Production, Dean Roberts, Outstanding Writing in an Animated Feature Production, Jim Cameron and Brian Smith. It won some DVD exclusive awards in 2003, Best Animated Character Performance in a DVD Premiere Movie for Martin Short and Dan Root, Best Animated DVD Premiere Movie for Carolyn Bates and Leslie Hoff, Best Director of a DVD Premiere Movie, Jim Cameron and Brian Smith, Best Editing of a DVD Premiere Movie for Robert S. Burchard, Best Original Score in a DVD Premiere Movie for Richard Gibbs. Oh, wow, Richard Gibbs. I recognize him from, he did something for Serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Not Serendipity. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yep.
That's what it was.
Love that movie, too.
yeah. And it was nominated for I don't understand. Why is this movie nominated for all these awards?
I don't know.
Good Lord. It's not even that great of a movie.
The award people liked it.
Apparently so. But I mean, it's not like it has, best animated, best overall animated feature. It has, best character performances, best song, best screenplay, best visual effects. I mean, I'm not saying that these awards are ancillary in any way, but, you know, it's not like where it won Best Animated Feature of the Year or anything like that.
Just curious why it got this many awards.
I am too. Nominations and winnings sometimes. I'm very, very curious now. And it is on DVD, I believe. Let me actually just look it up really quick just to make sure so I can be accurate. It's a doggone shame.
Lots of dog puns we're using tonight.
Yes. Let's see. 101 Dell.
My dog Cassie would be proud.
Yes. Sorry, folks. We're experiencing some technical difficulties. Not really, but yeah, I'm actually just looking to see if this is on DVD. Do you want to really say anything else? Expand more on it at all?
Not much I can say on this film. I mean, I wish I could. I wish I had more to contribute in terms of the sequel, but I have to say I preferred the live-action adaptions over this.
Yes.
Like, 102 Dalmatians, ugh, amazing film. I love it. And yes, that's mostly to do because Glenn Close is in it.
Yeah. It is on DVD, special edition DVD as far as 2002, so it hasn't been re-released recently on Platinum Edition, so but it is on DVD.
And also available on YouTube.
Yeah, probably.
So go watch it on YouTube if you don't want to go buy the
exactly
DVD.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's so funny. All right, so we are going to go to some ads, and then we will be back with the outro.
Yeah.
Dooncast will be back after these messages.
I go, 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 while listening to Dooncast.
This is Dr. Wily, and I will destroy Mega Man while listening to Dooncast.
This is Megatron, leader of the Predacons. I am calling you to tell you, you need to listen to the Beast Unleashed podcast. Yes, this is the only and first Beast Wars review show. We cover Beast Wars, Beast Machines, as well as various other factors. Join the hosts, Steve Megatron Phillips, TFG1 Mike, and Pecan Court Michael, every other week for the Beast Unleashed podcast, only on GeekCastRadio.com.
The Secret Origins podcast is the GCRN's Justice League cartoon review podcast, 25 episodes covering all 5 seasons of the DCAU's Justice League cartoon. You can find us on iTunes and the web at GeekCastRadio.com.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
Now back to Tooncast.
So, Miss Rising Star, final thoughts on 101 and 101 2.
All right, well, 101 Dalmatians, love it. Awesome film, amazing animated feature. Best, one of my favorite films growing up. 102 can stay in the Disney vault. I'm actually going to pretend that it was never made, so therefore I don't even have to comment on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're interested, if you're a diehard Disney fan, then by all means, go watch the sequel. But in my opinion, you're better off watching the live-action adaptions, because 102 sequel to 101 live-action is a much better sequel than this atrocity.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say on that.
I agree. 102 Dalmatians Patches London Adventure just doesn't sound like a movie that is worth watching, even if it's on YouTube. It just doesn't seem like it's I don't know. But going off of that, 101 Dalmatians, amazing. The original Disney film, Disney animated film, is just amazing. I love that movie. I can watch that movie anytime.
My favorite dog film from Disney, out of doubt.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that. So, thank you for joining us here on Tooncast or Subways. Get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on each episode post. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCR and Tooncast. Mine is TFG and Mike. What is your Twitter?
Tara Blair.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us what show you're leaving the message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast. I wish you'll join us next time when the Disney Spotlight will continue with Robin Hood. For now, I am TFG on Mike with
Rising Star Tara.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.